Welcome to Fireside Chats, Leadership Journeys, brought to you by the Office of Academic Clinical Affairs and hosted by Dr. Carolyn Porta. These chats bring together University of Minnesota Health Sciences students with experts for candid conversation on leadership, career pathways, sources of joy, and strategies to rejuvenate.
Hi, everyone. I'm Carolyn Porta. I'm an Associate Vice President here at the University of Minnesota in the Office of Academic Clinical Affairs. I'm a nurse, and I am happy to be hosting a fireside chat tonight with three fabulous human beings. Got Coach Lindsay Whalen. I have Director Stephanie Davis and Director Betsy McCann. I'm going to get us started off asking them to briefly introduce themselves, share a bit about their journey, and we'll start with you, Director Davis. I'll switch to first names very quickly.
Sure. Hi, Stephanie Davis. I'm Associate AD for Event Management here at Minnesota in Athletics, and I have the privilege of working with Betsy and Lindsay and her team. So I'm really excited to share this time with you. I have hopped around quite a bit in the college space, starting as in my undergrad years and working throughout that time in college athletics, primarily with football and football and track and field. And then had the opportunity to go to some amazing competitions and post-grad spaces. Worked at Georgia Tech while I went to Georgia State and got my master's, and then kind of moved around a bit. Definitely had some highs and lows through that time, but ultimately that map led me here. And so I've been here for about 5 years and have taken on some additional opportunities throughout those years, but have loved it every moment of it and look forward to this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. A sentence or two about what you do in the day-to-day, just so students have a sense of the AD role.
Other duties as assigned. Pay attention to that line on the job description, because that is majority of the role. No, really, I get to work with a bunch of really cool and dedicated people to try to showcase and celebrate student athletes in competitions. So essentially, if you go to a women's basketball game, members of our team have come together to put that on, from TV officials, team coordination, concessions, parking, ticketing, all of those different things. We work with those folks, band. We work with those folks to put on an amazing experience for not only our fans, but also our student athletes. So hopefully at the end of this, next time you go to a game, you'll say, oh, I know somebody who's involved in that process. But that's kind of what my team and I do.
Thank you. That's fabulous. Moving alphabetically, Director McCann. I'll disclose I do know her personally and socially as well.
Yes, it's so weird to hear you call me Director McCann. Good evening, everybody. It's great to see you all. My name is Betsy McCann, and here at the University of Minnesota, I'm the director of marching and athletic bands, and I'm also a professor in our School of Music, where I teach a concert band and teach conducting to undergraduates. So in my role here, the most public thing I do is run the marching band. So I'm in charge of that whole program, and I manage all of our athletic bands. So the groups that are out for basketball games, hockey games, volleyball, I manage all the other directors who are running all of that. Previous to being here at the U of M, I taught high school band. So if we have any high school band alums there, I loved that world that you were in when you were in school. I taught in the Twin Cities area. I taught in the Chicago area and loved that. I thought I was going to be a high school band director forever. And then life does weird things, and life took a weird turn. And I took this random part-time thing here at the U and realized, oh no, this is what I really love. So I've been here now for 10 years working at the U of M and being part of our athletic bands and also working over in the School of Music.
Thanks, Betsy. And Coach Whalen.
Hi, I'm Coach Whalen, Coach Way, as my our team calls me. I'm a U of M graduate, so this is home for me. I'm from an hour away from campus. I'm from Hutchinson, Minnesota. It was my dream to be a Gopher, and so I came to school here from 2000 to 2004, played basketball here, and then I went on to play overseas and in the WNBA for 15 years. And now this is my fifth year as a head coach of the women's basketball team. And so my day to day is, you know, getting to, you know, mentor and give back and direct a team to go out and compete on the floor and represent this great university and this great state. And so today we had a meeting where we prepared practice, and then we went out, we had film, some film study, we had some individual skill development, and then we had about an hour and 15 of minutes of team practice and then weights. And so we're halfway through the Big Ten season. This is our bye week. So we have a week here to rest a little bit, recover. And then also today we focused a lot defensively on some just defensive coverages and assignments and things like that. Tomorrow we'll go more offensive execution. And then we'll get ready this weekend to play Michigan at home at 2 o'clock at the barn. So my job now is to give everything back that I learned as a player as best I can to this next generation of great young women, student athletes, and ensure that they're in a positive environment where they can be themselves, their true selves, and grow and learn and earn their degree and hopefully win some games and have some fun and create memories together. So it's a great group. If you haven't been to a game, we'd love to have you at any point come out. We've got a young group, and I'm excited about this team and the future. Thank you for having me, and thank you for everyone's time.
Thank you all for taking and making the time. I'm very excited about this group. So I was not a band member in high school. I would have been a very big embarrassment. I was an athlete, and I do feel I'm just living a little bit vicariously through the coach here, thinking I could have been a good coach had I ever pursued anything like that, because I thought I was a decent player. But being a good player doesn't make you a good coach, right? Being a good human doesn't make you a good mentor. And yet for some people, you do turn out to be that. You turn out to be a leader. And all of you in different ways will be leaders, I believe, in the work and the paths that are in front of you. So as we look at Betsy, Stephanie, Lindsay, you've all been in your roles 5 to 10 years or so, and probably a few years before that in the other work that you did. Talk to us a little bit about your leadership, your work, and how it was different in these last few years during and coming out of the pandemic. Maybe how it wasn't different for you as the leaders doing the work that you've been doing. Any of you can pop in.
I'll be happy to jump in. We all just like took that breath to talk at the same time. So
just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Lindsay, what you were talking about resonates so much with me of like the point of why we're here doing this, working with these college students. And what I have always focused on here, I found I needed to focus more on during the pandemic. And I think more on now, not post-pandemic, but in whatever phase we happen to be in, where we're back in person, but things are still going on. And that's that my focus with the students is to create great human beings who are going to be the best people they can possibly be in the fields they're going into. And I just do that through band. And especially with my marching band, I've got 320 students in the group every year, and none of them are going to be marching band professionals because that doesn't exist. But they're going to be amazing nurses, or they're going to be spectacular engineers or educators or fill in the blank. And I think about what can I teach them through band, which is something that they love, or they wouldn't do it, that's going to help them do that. And I found during the pandemic, they just needed that more because band existed less, you know, in the way that we do it. It was really hard / impossible at some points of the pandemic to have band because we couldn't be together, or we could be together, but we had to stay so far apart and put these weird bags over our instruments and, like, you know, the whole story of all the accommodations. And a lot of the joy and the love for what we actually do was hard to find. So in order to keep students engaged, I had to fill that joy and that connection and that love with something else, which was all of the other stuff and the things we do together and why we're here. And now that we are back, doing what we do together again in the way we like to do it. We've all gone through this experience together and also in our own individual ways that vary from person to person. And I think I've had to be even more aware that these are all human beings in their own individual lives doing their own things. They're not just people who come together for band and we do band together. But I think I have a greater awareness of just knowing that there's so much outside that everybody has dealt with and is dealing with, and we need to make sure that we're nourishing that and honoring that for everybody as we do these things together too. And the pandemic definitely helped me see that and learn better ways to do that.
Thank you.
Steph, you want to go? You want me to go?
Sure, I'll go. Okay. So I'll be kind of quick with this one. It was two things. One is a sense of gratitude. I was able to connect with people on a different level. We had to pivot a lot, and I think strengths really came out. And I was very grateful for the teams that we had trying to get through. So gratitude is definitely something that I've tried to carry with me, and then being vocal about it. It's one thing to think, I appreciate you, but when you tell somebody that you appreciate them, it has a really profound effect. And so just trying to be more vocal and intentional about communicating that. The other thing is just making sure that you're working smarter, not harder. Coming up, I mean, I was in the office all day, every day, wanted to be there before my boss, after my boss left. I mean, and I have some amazing people on my team in my department, students, interns, assistant directors, and they are really committed to the work. They're excited about being around each other and all of that, but also just making sure that we're taking time for ourselves, being smart about how we're allocating our time. You know, every now and then I have to be like, okay, we'll take a day off. You know, we've had a few back-to-back events, let's, you know, take some time. Or hey, is this something that we can possibly do with a couple of people rather than just taking on the onus and burden for ourselves? Maybe we need to divide and conquer to be successful in these areas. So that's kind of what I've learned from COVID, through the pandemic, and transitioning into where we are now. It has been a lot easier to take that on. And I'm seeing that my hope is that also as we're planting these seeds, that as they become leaders in their departments and whatnot, and in their right, they'll try to, you know, make sure that their folks are working smarter, not harder, and also being, you know, grateful and showing signs of gratitude.
Love that, Stephanie.
We were one of those teams. Were we good to work with? Getting to the games. Hopefully.
Always.
Thank you. I think that realizing that pre-pandemic and post, like, we're all changed somehow, and we're all a little bit different after the pandemic. And I think understanding as a coach, as a leader, of finding more grace. I think offering people more grace while still holding the standard. And that's something that really I think is what great leaders do that I've been around, is that you find that grace, but you're still able to hold, like, no, this is what we need to get done. And I think if you can strike that, and I think that's something that I continue to work towards, is understanding that I have a team that I'm leading, and every single one of them either experienced COVID as a senior in high school, as a freshman in college, as a sophomore in college. I mean, formative years, really, really important years of, they got a lot taken away. And so I think, you know, understanding that, while also pushing them to points that, you know, on the basketball court, for instance, that to levels that they didn't possibly think that they could get to, that they could push through. And so I think we have the potential, and this generation has a potential who's gone through COVID, to be some of our best leaders, because they faced adversity during a very important time that none of us ever faced. So they faced adversity, So everybody's uncomfortable, and we all know that you grow when you're uncomfortable. And so I think that there's potential. And that's why I think this is great that we're chatting, that there's potential for our future leaders to be some of the best leaders that we've ever had in this country, in this world. And so, and I think just being open, honest, you know, being vulnerable at times, being yourself is the best way, you know, that I feel comfortable in my skin, like leading when I'm myself. But then also understanding that, you know, things aren't gonna, you know, you want it to happen, but I think offering people grace and some compassion through this has been something that at times through different parts of our society that we've lacked. And, you know, I think that if we continue to do that and continue to pour into each other, and as leaders pour into our teams, then you're going to start to like really see some really tremendous leaders emerge. And that's our job, is to, you know, foster that environment.
I appreciate that a lot. There's some themes here in terms of the grace and the gratitude, articulating that appreciation, giving space and being flexible. And then Betsy, your comments just about kind of almost promoting the humanness of these relational people that will go out and lead in their respective professions. Giving space for yourself, walking the talk that we talk a lot as leaders of, take the time you need. Let me support you in your self-care. We talk it, but do we walk it? So the question to each of you, do you walk the walk of self-care? And if yes, how? If no, why not? And then, you know, if you have a week to be yourself, what is that for you? Where are you in the world, and what are you doing to be yourself? Please don't just say work.
I'm gonna say last week, let's see. Last week, the week before, no, I wasn't. And I wasn't my best self. Hmm. I've made a point, because I got to a point of thinking X's and O's and wins and losses and this and that, that I wasn't really good for anybody. And so, you know, I think first and foremost, like, you know, having open and honest conversations with people that you can really trust is huge. And then, yeah, last week I did not. This week I did. I got a massage yesterday. So we had an off day. I got a massage. I went over to a friend's house for dinner on Sunday. So we have some time this week. But I don't walk it as much as I should. But I did do those few things. And today I was miraculously re-energized to be in practice, and I'm still feeling great today. And, so yeah, it's again, like, offer yourself grace, that I think we all are highly motivated and in whatever we're doing, we want to be the best. And, but you know, sometimes you got to take the foot off the pedal a little bit. You said if I had a week, and then I would golf, I would spend time with my dogs and my husband, I would watch a lot of Netflix, and probably go home to Hutch, because I live in Norway, and spend some time with my parents, and go to, like, you guys know this knick-knack store Patina, you know that store Patina, and I would go to like Caribou or get a coffee. Like, my day would be like, I'm getting up, having a coffee, sleeping in. I love to sleep. I'm not a morning person. I'm a sleeper inner. Get me a coffee, go to Patina, pick up some good stuff to cook for dinner, pick up my dogs, get some laundry done, have dinner ready for, you know, whenever, you know, my husband Ben gets home, and watch a movie and go to bed. Anyway.
Super great. Thank you. I've got a follow up that I'm going to get to Stephanie and Betsy.
All right. So Lindsay may not be a morning person, but I am. My self-care starts at about 4 a.m. I'm usually in the gym doing some meditation. I start with myself. I learned that one a few years back when I can start the day by taking care of myself, everything else goes better. I think if I kind of put myself on the back burner, I never really come to a good stopping point. And then when I come to a stopping point, I'm just too tired. So I start the day by taking care of myself and in whatever regard that that requires. And so actually last week, so I recently celebrated my birthday by going to a day spa, which was really cool. Don't do that too often. It's an annual thing for me. But if I had a week to just do whatever, it would probably be go back to Georgia for a bit and spend time with family, check out my favorite restaurants, just eat like crazy, and then go bowling. We're big bowlers in my family. I would definitely do some of that.
Thank you.
What time do you go to bed?
Let me tell you, these 8 o'clock games are hard.
Wednesday night. What time? Because I'm like, you're getting up at 4. You gotta.
Yeah. I'm making it. We just can't go into overtime. We just can't do that. Okay.
That's awesome.
New motivation. We've got to get Steph to bed. So let's win this game. I don't feel like I'm an awesome role model for this question right now. And Steph, I think you can relate to some of this. I made a decision at some point. I'm doing my career like not in the right order. I've been a professor here at the U now, and I've been working here 10 years, but I never got that terminal degree. I don't have the DMA, which in my field is kind of what everybody has. So 4 years ago, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this and find a way to make it work. So I'm doing my full-time teaching job, which is way more than full-time with what I do. And I've also been working on the degree for the last 4 years. And I have a husband at home. I have two elementary school kids at home, and like they are, you know, a job unto themselves. And I just am super stressed, to be honest, and super busy, and I'm doing too much. Part of doing the degree is I made the decision when I started that I was going to cut back on something because I can't do everything. And I thought I was being super smart, like, okay, how do I spend my time every day? And what am I going to not do so that I have time to do the degree work? And I cut back the thing that I love, which maybe wasn't the smartest way to do it. Because the thing that makes me feel okay and whole and like myself is running and triathlon. Like those are my passions that I do for fun. And I was like, you know what? I can't be getting up like stuff at 4 a.m. and like going on the long run. I have to spend that time studying. So I switched and I'd get up early and I would, you know, study and do whatever coursework. And a couple years of that, and I realized this is not really a good option. This is not going to work. So I try to get just a little bit of something in every day that feeds me and rejuvenates me. And that could be just going on a short run at some point. It could be literally like here in my office, closing the door and doing a little workout in the office for 20 minutes in the middle of the day, because I just need to move. It's a half mile to walk around the outside of the stadium. So when I just can't think, and at some point I'll go walk around the building. But I try to make sure that I do something, even though it's little, to feed myself. And I hang on to my carrot, which is that I will graduate this semester. And then I'm going to like have that time back in my life. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And it's been wonderful, and I've learned so much, and it's worth it, and I'm glad I'm doing it. But it has been a struggle to remain whole as a human being with the degree on top of the job on top of the family. So I think you can like make it all work, but it's challenging. It's really hard.
It is. I appreciate the transparency, and maybe this small story will inspire some of you as well. I am reading a book written by the granddaughter of Winston Churchill about her grandfather. And one of the chapters talks about how much he craved his time with friends, his dinners, his social hours, his vacations. And he made time for all of those, even while being a major figurehead in a significant world war. He also took up a hobby out of just nowhere. As an older adult, took up just painting. And so, you know, someone like that can do that at that time in his life and career. I think some of us can find time for doing some of the things that we care about that rejuvenate us, that heal us, and make us better humans and better leaders, better contributors to society. It's a good book if anyone wants the info on that. I'll pass it along. Lindsay, you commented about people you can trust and open up to speak truth to you. And I think as leaders, this can be challenging. You end up in a position of power where your teams work for you. They can be fired by you, and they don't always necessarily feel they can speak truth to you. So I guess a question here, and then as I ask this question, interns, this will be a transition after the responses to any of you asking questions, okay? So how do you foster your teams being able to speak truth to you? And how do you find those people you trust that you can be truthful with and get that connection, get that accountability? But also, I have to have someone I can go to that I can also vent to and trust that that person isn't going to take it beyond the room. You know, that's true in any industry, that is true in any leadership role. Just wondering if you have any tidbits of advice along those lines, any of you.
I remember, Steph, I don't know if you were at this or not last year when President Gable came and spoke to us at is a big group of women in the athletic department over at the time, I think it was one of the club rooms. And it's really stuck with me. She says she has her kind of like her personal board of directors that it's like she has her, you know, CEO, CFO, her treasurer of people in her life. Maybe at work, maybe away from work that she can talk to, that she can bounce ideas off of, that she can vent to. And that always really stuck with me. And so I call my mom, my CEO. She's my CEO, you know, and she knows me best. She knows when I'm, you know, she knows when I need this, when I need that. And I've just, I rely a lot on my family, you know, and then I've worked with people. We've been through some thick and thin times within our staff that we've just built this bond that we can, that we are there for each other. We just are. And we, I think that's special. Like you said, it's, yes, we're coworkers and, I'm in charge, I'm the coach, but, I think you just develop that through like just truly caring about people first. And you want people, if you want to have a successful, I think, team, organization, group, everybody, has got to be them their true selves and feel that they are supported. And so I think you just over time we're put in positions of literally win and loss, you know, adversity throughout the game that we've just so I've got people at work, I've got people away from work, I've got people that I talk to once a year. Mm-hmm. When it bottles up, it's not good. You got to, you know, the more you can communicate, the more you can talk, the more, here's the other thing too. People are really smart. You know, people have great ideas. I think rely on like, people are just, mm-hmm. you know, you got to have that trust, but, like no question's a bad question, you know, I think just having that just helps us all through times and just, I don't know. I just, you know, big believer that everybody's also doing, everybody's doing the best they can. And so everybody wants to be successful and wants to do well. So it's all about people. Surround yourself with great people on, like for me, on and off the floor. Mm. And so, yeah.
Thank you. Love that.
It's all about people. I totally agree. I think two things. I think having someone you can just like be yourself with and vent with and have a safe space is super important. during the pandemic, a group of women started this group. We're called the Baton Moms. We're a very cool text group, but it's women who are moms and college band directors. And sometimes we can feel like unicorns because there are not a lot of us out there. We're in a like super male dominated field. And the women who came before us, I mean, like, I don't know if any of them ever had children as well. It's just not something that we have any models for. So we have this text group. It's like half a dozen of us from all over the country. And that's where we can vent about something. We can ask for advice. We can just share anything that's going on. And that has been super helpful as far as feeling like I've got a team on my side, even though I see them maybe like once a year at a conference. But it's really nice to have that connection. As far as like running a team, I don't know if you can read in my background, the word empower is on my board. And that's like my word. So every day when I walk in my office, I see the word empowered. And it reminds me of why I'm here and what I'm doing. Kind of like Coach Whalen's talking about, you know, you think so much about win and loss. And I think so much about what do I have to execute today? And how am I going to deal with the fact that it's pouring outside and I have to adjust my rehearsal? And like, it's so easy to get bogged down. And I put that there so that I remember, like, my point is that I'm here to empower people to be the best they can be and do their thing. And my goal in running my team is that if I go down and get hit by a bus or something someday, everything can keep going and everybody's going to be fine. And I do that by making sure that I'm accountable and I'm the first one to live up to mistakes. I'm the first one to say, we need to change this. This isn't working. How's it happening? I try to empower other folks on my team and my students too, to make decisions and be part of running the whole organization of the marching band. And I think they feel that way. And I think that that works. I actually got COVID like 2 days before our bowl trip this year. So I couldn't go on the bowl trip. So this is like a travel group of 350 people and executing all the logistics. And all of a sudden I'm in bed and I can hardly talk. And it went fine. So I felt like maybe I'm doing this okay. You know, the team is empowered to do everything they need to do with or without me. I would have much rather been on the trip, but I did feel like maybe that was a win as far as how I'm running the organization.
It's a good example. Thank you.
So like Lindsay and Betsy said, you know, have a group of people, collection of folks within the athletics industry and outside that I just kind of connect with, and it helps to keep me grounded. First and foremost, I mean, off the top of my head, if anything happens, if ever I'm thinking, oh, I want to talk to somebody, I'm definitely calling my mom. I was actually fortunate enough to kind of move her up here. So it's, she's actually right next door, but I'm really excited to have that. But yeah, she is the first and foremost person. And she knows me, and she's one that can easily say, no, that's not Stephanie. Let's think about this, you know, and I appreciate the accountability. In regards to work, I believe in welcoming a space that, or fostering a space that welcomes diversity of thought, that allows people to feel like they are contributing regardless of what role they play. So from the students to the event staff to my assistant directors, interns, to me, I feel that everybody is going to leave their mark on our department, on the event. And so what do they want that to be? And we talk about the athletics department's actions. We have five of them, and we talk about how we can incorporate that and also hold each other accountable. And we do those check-ins, and I ask for feedback. Sometimes it's just a matter of maybe we don't really get into the weeds of things. And I just sit down and I say, how are you doing? How's work doing? What can I do to help you? So ultimately, in order for us to be successful, I think it's about explaining what the goal is. Here's the outcome that we need. What can I do to help support you and kind of move some of those obstacles maybe out of the way? And who do we need to bring to the table to make that happen?
Thank you. Interns, any questions you want to raise? I know a few have been answered indirectly through some of the conversation. Robert, you want to pose yours?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, though. I really do think you three really did kind of answer it in a lot of ways, but I'll formulate it again for folks. I was wondering what you do with folks on your team who just aren't living up to your expectation of them, and how you like reach, you know, into that spot where they can respond. I don't know. I hope that makes sense, but I feel like you know, especially Betsy, I feel like you answered, you know, empowerment. That makes a lot of sense to me for sure. But if you had anything else to add there, that would be interesting to hear. Thanks.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I think it's also directing the right work to the right people. You know, like I get to know the people who are on my team, and I know that if I give this kind of task to this person, they are going to be on fire and they're going to do a great job. But this other kind of area may not get done. It may not get done well, whatever. And it's trying to find a diverse enough team with like the right combination of skills that I can know where I'm delegating to, I find to be really helpful. And if something that I think is supposed to go well and should go well is not going well, I'll have a frank conversation too. And always in the back of my mind is like, what else is going on? Maybe they're not performing well because of something else. So first and foremost, make sure they're okay. And then talk about my expectation. Did they have that same expectation? If not, let's talk about the difference. And if so, let's talk about what scaffolding and what help I can provide to help them meet the expectation and get there.
So Betsy has just role modeled trauma-informed leadership without maybe knowing that those are the words we put on it for the kind of things.
We actually train the marching band in trauma-informed leadership, believe it or not, all 320 students.
That's fabulous. I'll follow up with you on that. It's great because there is always something going on, usually in someone's life, that is a reason for a misstep or something going wrong or poorly. Most, like it was said earlier, I think by Coach Whalen, people want to do a good job, or maybe Stephanie, I'm not sure. People want to do good work. So what's going on when they're not? Stephanie or Lindsay?
So I think, because I tend to see this quite a bit, and sometimes it's knowing that people come with a set of skills, but they also need to know that they have the capacity, and we just have to position them to be successful with that. And sometimes it's reminding people that, okay, we're at this little bump in the road. You have the capacity to do this. You can do this, right? But what's going on in the process that maybe we just need to reevaluate? Like Betsy mentioned, maybe there is something going on outside of work that we're not aware of, or maybe it's that, for example, if I have a staff member that has 4 or 5 events in one weekend, they're probably maxed out at capacity. So I need to look at how I can help, because for them to be successful, we're all successful. So what can we do to kind of shuffle that around?
Yeah, I think for me, I have, you know, we're playing a sport. So you can instantly see results right there. Like it's right in front of you. And so, there's times when it needs to be, you know, accountability is, I try to figure out the best way that each person or a group together responds, whether it's, arm around the shoulder, whether it's, you know, quick sub, this is what we need you to do. Can you do it? Go back. Maybe the voice has to get a little louder, you know, to get some, you know, whatever it is to get that intensity to get to that point. For instance, that was halftime the other day at Purdue. And I was extremely proud of our team because we came out and we played a really good second half. Now we didn't win, but I saw growth and progress. But yeah, I think if you start to see, you know, multiple days in a row of somebody who's kind of veering, something's usually going on. And I think you have to establish that trust through conversations, through, being there for them and just keep showing up as a leader, being consistent. You have to be consistent. And so I think then you're able to, you know, work through whatever the issue is. But yeah, I mean, nine times out of 10, there's something away from basketball for, you know, that's happening. And so, yeah. And I think as staff for, you know, whether it's, you know, an assistant coach or somebody on our staff, I think it's, again, it's conversations and it's, there's, you know, check-ins and daily, weekly, monthly. You know, I think you, as a leader, you have to have this great pulse on what's all happening. And that's why it's a great challenge, because you gotta, you know, get as, I mean, 3 years, I mean, I've got probably, well, 15 players and staff. I think you said 300 and some. So I'm like, all right, that's a year. that's impressive. And so, but yeah, I think it's, and for us, the great players, they want that, you know, they want to know, they want to be coached. Film is the greatest teacher. So today we watch film, tomorrow we'll watch film, and, you know, and then it's the whole team is kind of seeing, you know, what I'm thinking, what, you know, and then kind of, what are you thinking? Why did you do this or what, you know, and then you kind of start to really get to the bottom of it. And so for me, film is the greatest teacher, because, you know, in real time, we can, you know, next day we can go back and we can look at some really good things we did and some things where we need to get better. And, so yeah, that's an advantage that I think I have is the film study.
Well, and we actually encourage some of that in our learning and growing as well, whether it's a recorded simulation or asking folks to record and watch themselves do an interview with a patient or do a lecture or presentation as well. Yeah, it's interesting. Jenna, go for it.
Awesome. Thank you all for being here. Just going off of Robert's question, you're going to be having a lot of conversations with different people, different personalities, different skills. How would you describe your communication style? And I'm curious if it differs depending on who you're talking to and just how you handle those situations.
I guess I could start off with this one. Betsy can attest to it. She's been in plenty of my meetings. But when it deals with individual communication, I like to be specific to that person. I know that some people prefer more direct. I need, you know, numbers. I need the whys, all that stuff. I just try to learn who I'm talking to or who I'm engaging with and understand what they're trying to get out of it, so I can kind of tailor my communication that way. However, for some of our large events, some of our core meetings and all of that stuff, I'm usually talking to a room full of people. So I don't necessarily have the luxury of doing immediate tailoring unless there are maybe one-off questions or whatnot, but I usually like to set the tone so everybody knows what we're doing in this space, what the hopeful outcomes are, and the fact that I usually tell them we are however many different departments, but at the end of the day, we are University of Minnesota. At the end of the day, we are representing women's basketball. So we need to think about that as a united front. We need to come together with that in mind, that everything we do is a representation of whatever team and then the university. So I try to make sure that people also feel welcomed, because clearly if I'm inviting you to this space, your opinion and your contributions are valued. I think those are very helpful in communication.
Thank you.
Hey, for the record, Stephanie is so good at running meetings. And if you want to go to a meeting and be like, that's how you do it, go to a Stephanie meeting. Because she does that. She makes everybody feel welcome. She makes everyone feel valued. But it's also like, get stuff done. There's no wasted time. You know, you don't walk out of that thinking, oh my gosh, that could have been 15 minutes and it was an hour. Like, they're awesome. If you want to know how to run a meeting, ask Stephanie if you can just jump into one of her sometime.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Thanks.
I love that. Anything to add, Coach Whalen?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I can get going on stories and stuff and with my team and history and, oh, back in this and that. But I think that the most they appreciate is just clear, concise, direct. This is what we're doing. And, you know, same goes for our staff. And I think I was talking to Coach Shimmy today, and to your point, I need to sit down in one of Steph's meetings, Betsy, but it's like, we've been going for, this is, it'll be 6 months of pretty much straight through. And it's what we do. But I want our, like, I want our meetings to be like, first for practice tomorrow, half hour, 45 minutes max. That's if there's any conversation on, okay, the 49ers beat the whatever, you know, because it is, you want to have a little bit of that too. But it's like, we're in the middle of the Big Ten. I told my players that I need 75 minutes, and it's got to be like, we got to get to what we need to get to. And so there can't be any wasted reps. I started doing this year after going to one of Coach Hugh McCutcheon's practices, is I just write out practice. So everybody has everybody knows what we're doing that day. And so it's just upfront. This is what it is. Now, some days you might get to all of it. Some days you might not, but that way everybody's got an idea of this is what it's going to be. And I think it kind of alleviates any of the uncertainty, and we can just get to it. So time and place, you know, I think there's time and place for that communication when you're, you know, just kind of talking and, you know, everybody's, you know, whatever, jovial and things. And I think there's a time when it's boom, this is what it is. And, you know, I think when I go in and here's the game plan and this is what we have to do, those are typically, they're really good sessions, really good practices and games that we have. So, what do they say? Like short and sweet, you know, it's not me talking right now, but, short and sweet and to the point is I think what people want and what people respect.
I love that. Yeah. It's good to know what's happening, get the information, and I'll be on the same page. I think my approach, Jenna, I love your question. I think it's super interesting to think about. I feel like I try to make what can be super impersonal feel personal to the people I'm communicating with. And I think what I do maybe feels similar to you all working with patients, where I have probably 400 or so students that I work with every year, and a lot of them in really big groups. And I want every one of them to feel like they have a personal relationship with me and I care about them, even though I'm talking to 300 people at one time. I want them to know that they are important and they feel like they're valued and they feel like they have value to contribute to what we're doing. Because otherwise there's no way to get them to buy in and get them to like be part of the team and be as invested as I need them to be. And I guess that's similar to having a whole bunch of patients, some of whom you like hardly ever see, but when you do see them, that's a really big deal to them to be in that room with you. And I think it can be challenging to make every individual feel like they are the most important thing right now. So my shtick, which my students like talk about all the time, is I get to know all of my new students' names by day two of marching band. So I'll have like 100 students come in, and by day two, I've learned all of their names because they know that I know them as an individual, and it freaks them out a little bit in the beginning. But then it just opens a door and I can have conversations, and I can randomly see some kid in a crowded hallway or walking across campus and call them by name, and they feel like, hey, somebody knows me here. And that helps them, like with that first step, just get invested and feel important, because we all want to feel important and we all want to feel like somebody sees us and knows us. So that's what I try to do in a really big group, is pare it down to that individual relationship and create something there.
That's a great example. Thank you. It's also a challenge. I don't know if I could do that. So I'm going to have to work on the brain function there, the elasticity. All right, we've got
time. Can I add something?
Yes, please.
I just thought of this. I think that it's really important as leaders. You know, we mentioned, it was a great question on when people aren't, you know, meeting the standard. I think it's really easy to focus on what people, you know, don't do well or where they're falling short. And I think a lot of times we can get fixated on that. And I think focusing on where people are great and where people are, I think just that confidence goes a long way. So, you know, focusing on what people are doing well, I think is huge. And so, Yeah, I don't know. It just popped into my head because, you know, I've been a part of a lot of teams, and I think the ones where the great coaches, they're really, you know, they put people like you guys said, Steph and Betsy, like in positions to be successful. But I think it's easy for us to nitpick at little things like, oh, I wish this percentage was that way, but hey, she gives 110% here. So it's just like, as I think we got to keep that in mind, you know, as we grow and we grow as leaders and grow as teams, is people have a lot of really good stuff to offer, and focusing on those positives, I think goes a long way. Sorry.
What you're sharing is also a piece of advice for personal development, that you play to your strengths, and some of you are nodding your heads, but it is that idea of leaning completely into what you're great at and not really even thinking too much about making the weaknesses better. Doesn't mean that you're not trying to better yourself, but you really do emphasize and focus on those areas that are strengths. All right, I want to pop in two more questions kind of quickly here. So if the three of you could go back in time, knowing where you are today, what is a skill you might have focused on developing a little bit more earlier that you think would serve you well today or does serve you well today? And I'm asking that because we've got a lot of interns here poised to graduate, ready to move forward in their careers. And they've been so in their lane. This is what I'm learning. This is my degree. This is my path. And yet we know our paths are windy. Maybe there's a skill or an idea that you have that will remind them to look beyond the lane that they're in right now.
That speaks to me. I'm very good at staying in my lane. And I wish I would have learned earlier to, I guess, one, maybe have the creativity to like see what's outside my lane and think about that a little more. But then also just to have like the self-empowerment to stand up for myself more or advocate for myself more or shoot for things that I felt like maybe I wasn't qualified for, or I wasn't sure I was good enough for, or, you know, like all the self-doubt talk that can happen, but go for it anyway. If I had done that earlier than I did, it would have been really cool, I think.
Thanks, Betsy.
Want me to go, Steph? So I didn't come up with these, but I've really tried to live it this year, that don't shy away from uncomfortable things and uncomfortable conversations, because that's actually living. And as people, we're meant to feel all the emotions. So two different things. And I got these, I didn't come up with these. I went and listened to a speaker earlier this year with the Leadership U series. And that part, I think so often it's, you know, you try to just, I don't want to have that conversation because it's going to be hard. Well, that's actually growing. That's actually living. That's like, and then you work through it and you get to the other side of it, and it's unbelievable. And whether it's people, whether it's, you know, like Betsy said, like changing something. Hey, we got to do this. You know, we got to try this play, or we got to try this coverage more. I think not shying away from that. And then we all enjoy to like being happy and feeling, but at the same time, like we're meant to feel it all, and that's okay. And that is okay. And so for me, the middle of the Big Ten season playing, I think diving into that and just really, truly believing that. And, you know, if it didn't go perfectly today, guess what? You got a new chance to do it tomorrow. And I think just, so those things, like kind of like diving into those like uncomfortable things and understanding you don't have to be perfect, you know, you don't have to be perfect. And then you get another chance to do your best tomorrow.
It's great.
That's a really, really good question, Carolyn. Oddly enough, my mother's name is Carolyn, and I'm about to use her in this answer. So she would always tell me as a kid, be the best Stephanie you can be. She wouldn't say be good. She wouldn't say, you know, be better. She would say, you know, are you being the best Stephanie you can be? And so there would be times, particularly as I was kind of getting started, I think, in the industry, that I was really questioning, oh, am I doing it right? Or, you know, am I in the right space? Or is this, you know, it just was a little tough, particularly being a Black woman in a predominantly white male industry. And so I wish I would have relied more on that being the best Stephanie I can be. It's basically setting a standard and a bar for myself. And I wouldn't necessarily say I'm getting away from being a perfectionist, but I do have high expectations for myself. And I wish I would have trusted that a little bit more as I was when I was younger.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to queue up the final question unless there's anything else that comes up from the interns. And I really do appreciate the time and the stories and the examples and the tidbits of advice and the vulnerability and the challenging of us to be vulnerable and to be whole and to embrace not just the highs of life, but also the lows, the joys, the pains. I'm going to ask you the question about a book you've been reading, a Netflix series you love, a podcast you've been listening to. It could be just fun and light. It could be inspirational. And I'll lead with one that I'm not getting through fast because I'm finding myself wanting to absorb every chapter. And it's called Inciting Joy or Incite Joy. I don't have it in front of me, by Ross Gay, who's a poet / essayist. And I stumbled on the book. This is going to sound a little blasphemous, but I was in the McAllister bookstore, not the University of Minnesota bookstore. And I found this book. And I went into it and read the intro. And it was basically him saying he wanted to write about joy. And every chapter he wrote was about pain and sorrow and loss and the hurts of life. But as a result of those give us the ability to feel joy and to feel the depths of joy. And it resonates with just other life philosophies I've had. And so sure enough, the first chapter I read is about his beautiful relationship with his father and going through his father passing. And I'm in tears by the end of the chapter. And I'm like, what kind of book is this about joy? And yet it's exactly what some of the messages tonight have been, that to know joy, we need to know pain, and to know true wholeness, we need to be willing to also be vulnerable, not just strong all the time. So I strongly encourage the book. I'm about halfway through, and each chapter is its own little moment, and they're not strung together. It's really a beautiful, beautiful book. So okay, anyone, a book, a podcast, a Netflix, the Everywhere, Everything, All at Once was recommended to me by Maddie. I just saw your thumbs up. I thought it was the weirdest movie ever, and I ended up loving it. I did, but it is a weird one, and it's up, of course, for all the awards because weird ones win. So, yeah.
I am 100% in that boat of loving that movie. I saw it and immediately I was like, oh my gosh, I need to see it again because I don't think I understood half of that. And I need to watch it.
Yeah.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yeah.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. That's the title?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I got to write this down.
You do. You do. We can follow up too. But yeah, people
What's it on? What's it on?
Oh my God, how do you summarize it? Maddie, you're good at this. You're a sci-fi person. Summarize it briefly and then...
Is it Netflix or Hulu or...
I don't know where it's streaming. I saw it in theaters last summer, but it should be somewhere. It is about an Asian family that is running like a laundromat in the US, and there's like a lot of tension between the mother and daughter. The daughter is gay and she wants to bring like her girlfriend to a big party. And her mom is like, your grandfather's here. We can't deal with it. Anyway, it's like a whole thing that has like the multiverse going on. And it's basically a movie about healing mother-daughter relationships. It's really good. It's really weird. There's a universe where people have hot dogs for fingers, basically. I cried in the movie theater, so highly recommend. Up for a lot of awards.
Hot dog fingers?
Yes, it's so weird. It's just the mom, the main character mom, moves into and out of all different realities. And there is that common thread of family dynamic and connection and relationship. It is a powerful movie. Okay, we're at 7 o'clock, which means we have a minute. I'm going to give ourselves 1 minute for all three of you to answer this question. I end on time, but we're going to do it. So, okay, Coach Whalen, a recommended book, series, podcast, anything?
I need to read more. Podcasts. I listen to the ESPN Daily a lot. And then I just finished Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So that was one of my go-tos. Okay.
Perfect. Stephanie.
Most of my reading is journal articles or textbooks now. But in terms of watching a program, I've really gotten into The Pressure Cooker on Netflix. I don't recommend watching it on an empty stomach, but it's really cool. So it's a bunch of chefs that basically judge themselves and they vote on each other.
Seen it, not watched it. So now I'm going to. Betsy.
We've already talked about my most recent favorite movie. Go watch it. I'm going to answer music because that's what I do. I've been totally digging Bjork's newest album lately. I think it's just brilliant and so fascinating and interesting and an amazing piece of art. So if you're into that, go Bjork. Go ahead.
Whose album?
Bjork. B-J-O-K. Okay. She's amazing. It's weird.
Thank you.
Amazing. And then if you need something in the background, I've been listening in the background to John Luther Adams. Like, go find, like, just look up Become Ocean or Become Desert. And if you got to do some work and just have something that makes you feel good in the background, I think that's going to do the trick. That was the last thing I listened to. That's how I decided what to answer. I'm like, what's the last thing I had on?
I love it. Thank you all. Thank you, interns, for being here and for challenging us to think about what could be encouraging to you. And thank you all for being here. Betsy, Stephanie, and Lindsay, we are grateful.
Thank you for listening. Let us know what you gained from this conversation by writing a quick review. Please share this podcast with others, subscribe for future conversations, and check out our other episodes. Explore health sciences at the University of Minnesota at health.umn.edu.